So I thought it would be nice to open this program with a little bit of just breathing. I have two guests standing by, John Monroe, our holistic eye care educator, and we also have scheduled Dr. Tia Washington, who's going to be talking about eye transplant surgery. So that's pretty special, but I wanted everyone to just take a minute and take a breath. Really just take a nice deep breath, sigh it out. Another nice deep breath. And relax as you sigh it out. And one more deep breath. Take it really, really deep. And just let everything go. Let all the worry dissolve from your system. And just relax as you exhale. And just keep your breath deeply flowing into your body as much as you can. And as you exhale, just allow the distress and the anxiety to leave with your breath. You could also do an exercise which is inhaling as if you're breathing into the navel and then exhale again out of the navel. And as you visualize that breath coming into your body, reach up to the base of your lungs, draw out any anxiety, fear, and push it out through the navel. Because we have to keep in mind that anxiety, fear also can have an impact on the lungs. So your body gets tight, your ribs get tight, your lungs get tight, and you might end up saying, oh no, what's happening? But it might just be fear. So just breathe in deeply, exhale slowly, and really just take your time and find your own natural rhythm in all of this. It's a wonderful thing. So I'm going to say hello to John Monroe. Welcome, John.
Oh, hi, Kathy. How's it going today?
Oh, it's good. It's good. I have, you know, I'm here in the studio. I actually walked from home. I don't live too far away. And all along the way, I was taking pictures of all the spring blossoms. I'm going to put them up on my Facebook and Twitter and such so that people can remember that it is spring. And it's a time of transition. It's a time of cleansing. And that seems to be what our world is doing. How are you?
All right. It's been snowing over here. So we have snow on the ground, 20 degrees outside today. But it'll be warming up over the weekend. And spring is starting tomorrow, isn't it?
I believe so. I think today is just the, you know, that timing where the hours shift into equal hours. It might have happened in the middle of the night, or maybe it'll be the middle of the night tonight. I'm not that clear on exactly when it happens. But, yeah, it's time for us to go inward as we are in many ways pulling back and isolated from contact. We can go inward, and we can do a lot of research, reading, interacting via the phone, the internet. So there's a lot of ways for us to maintain contact. And I'm happy, really, that we are here, terrestrial, as well as on the internet, so people can listen. So I see people are sending me text while we're live. So you actually introduced me to our guest coming up. But part of that is because you are always doing research on revolutionary eye care and all the things that are coming up and have potential for people to be able to engage with as they change their behaviors and get connected to different kinds of nutrients, as well as the exercises and other things that you share. So is there something revolutionary you want to share with us before we I invite you to introduce our guest?
Well, I'm always looking for new breakthroughs that are coming out to improve eyesight and other problems people are having. And I discovered this Dr. Kia Washington. I was just looking at something on the internet, and I got a hold of her director of research, Dr. Sue. And he's right here in Boulder, Colorado. He works over at the CU Surgical Center. And, you know, I was talking to him about Dr. Washington, and she's actually doing research on whole eye transplantation. Because, you know, sometimes people have accidents and things happen, and, you know, eyes can get diseased and have a lot of problems. So she's working on a way to actually remove the bad eye and transplant a good eye into somebody, and hopefully they could see again. So it's pretty interesting topic, and we're going to be calling her in a few minutes and see what's up. She's up in Denver, Colorado. So we'll have to see what she has to say about this. We have some questions for her, and we'll see what it is. If anybody's listening to the show right now, you might want to hear about this. It's kind of something that, you know, people have talked about for the past 30, 40 years, you know, being able to do eye transplantation. And it might, you know, becoming a real thing.
Well, yeah, I think that would be something that is possible. I thought it was already possible. Don't they do eye transplants already?
See, the biggest problem was how to, you know, get the optic nerve to reattach and send a signal to the visual cortex in the back of the brain. And that's always been kind of the biggest problem with it, is how to get the optic nerve to reattach and hook up and operate properly.
Okay, well, we'll ask her about that. And you also mentioned not too long ago to me something about this other kind of therapy you were following. What was that? Something to do with, was it nutrient therapy or a vitamin therapy or something?
Well, nutrition is a big part of the eye. You know, a lot of the nutrition and blood circulation to the eye can, you know, cause problems if you're not having good blood circulation and you're not getting good nutrients. You know, like people that drink a lot and smoke cigarettes and eat a lot of sugar and animal fats, other things, you know, the chemicals in foods and the artificial colors and flavoring and GMOs. And so nutrition and diet is real important for the whole body. You know, not just the eyes, but it helps the eyes, but it helps a lot of other things. So we've been working on that, and we're also going to talk today about regrowing an eye from stem cells and genes and DNA. So if you do an eye transplant, you would get an eye that's grown from your stem cells, and they take a little tissue from the eye, and they can grow an eye and then transplant it into you, and you'll have a fresh new eye. So that's, you know, kind of what I've been looking at with this, and we'll be talking to Dr. Kia Washington about this.
Well, that's good. That's good. And it's interesting that we can begin to make this kind of scientific development in such a positive way, though it does take time to get to the point where it actually is working and where people can gain access to it. But it's nice to know that there is this kind of work happening and the potential is there. So we will be talking about that soon. So what have you been doing in terms of, I know you've been talking to a lot of our listeners who call you with some of their eye issues and problems. So why don't we give out your contact now so that people can connect with you? Because I know that you do offer a lot of help. I've heard feedback from them that that's the case.
Yeah, I do get calls from people listening to shows that you know, the shows we do. And, you know, I try to help them out. A lot of people are having problems with money and, you know, things going on in the world, but we try to give them some help. And if anybody wants to contact me, I'm in Boulder, Colorado, and we're on mountain time here. People on the East Coast and other parts of the country, they're on different time zones. So in New York and East Coast, everybody, you're like 2 hours ahead of us here in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And the office number here is 303-494-4532. And we have a website. It's drbanker.com. It's drbanker.com. And the phone number again is 303-494-4532. And I'm usually in the office Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Mountain Time.
Okay, so I'm going to take a bit of a break while I get our guest on the line. So stay tuned, everybody. Hold on, John.
All right.
I am round.
So as we're waiting, let's ground ourselves into the earth, connect to that energy. Remember, every remedy just about has been found in our tropical rainforests. They might synthesize it later, but the earth can provide. So let's contemplate.
Nature too. I am mountain, I am valley. I am rivers running through. I am mighty oak and oh, the lowly weed. I have given birth to everything that you will ever need. Air that's pure, water too for you. I am round, I am green, I am blue. I am mother, suffering too. I am earth, I am sad, I am blue. I am mother, struggling too. How I struggle to stay balanced, and I struggle to be free. which are made in spite of me. No more war and no more killing, no more greed. Do you agree? Do you care? Can you care? Please care. I am round, I am green, I am blue, I am mother, so are you. We are one, you are I, can you see? We're together, eternally. Love your neighbor.
I'm Catherine Davis, and we've been speaking with John Monroe, who is a holistic eye care educator, and we're now being joined by Dr. Tia Washington, and she is visiting associate professor of surgery and plastic reconstructive, associate professor, director of research, and vice chair of diversity and inclusion at the Department of Surgery, Division of Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery at the University of Colorado. And I just want to say hello and welcome to the air, Dr. Washington.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. I've been so excited because John Monroe told me about some of the work that you're doing. You are essentially a surgeon and help people with reconstructive surgery. So before getting into the eyes, can you explain the kind of work that you do?
Yes, I will. So I, like you said, I am in the Department of Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery. My training is in plastic and reconstructive surgery as well as hand and upper extremity surgery. So I spend half of my time doing research, which we'll talk about soon, and then the other half of the time I am seeing patients and doing surgery. So a lot of the surgery, as far as the reconstructive aspect, entails just repairing parts of the body that have suffered damage. It could be from cancer. It could be from any kind of trauma. And we, you know, take tissue from different parts of the body to reconstruct damaged parts of the body. And then the majority of my time I spend doing hand and upper extremity surgery. So this is basically any type of surgery involving the hand. I know a lot of you have probably heard of carpal tunnel syndrome. So that is one of the most frequent surgeries that I do. But I also do surgeries for people that have suffered trauma to their hands, for example, broken their wrist. Sometimes we have situations where people are in car accidents and parts of their hand are really damaged, and we need to repair all of the tissues and also sew back on some limbs and fingers at times. So it's really kind of a broad spectrum of surgeries that I do.
So what happens to a person's finger or some part of their body when there's really serious damage? It's hard for me to imagine that you could actually reattach a finger and get everything right. It's not like just gluing it on. How does that work?
Well, I will give you an example of a surgery that I did 2 days ago. A gentleman cut three of his fingers by accident, and the hand, obviously a very intricate part of the body, so there are bones, tendons, nerves, and arteries. And in particular, he almost cut off his small finger or his pinky finger. And so I spent several hours repairing the bone, repairing the tendon so that he can move the fingers, repairing the nerves so that he can get sensation back to the finger, as well as sewing together the arteries and veins so that he can get blood supply to the finger. So that's an example of a situation where someone has a significant trauma, and that's how we repair things.
Okay, so it's a highly skilled kind of surgery, I would imagine, to be able to do that, those tiny parts of the inner body. So I take my hat off to you if I were wearing one.
Thank you.
It's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
So we were talking earlier about the eyes. There are so many eye conditions that people are not able to recover from. And then
right.
there are people who are born without sight. And I was really surprised. In some ways, I was surprised. Well, because I always thought that they did eye transplants, but apparently it's not as easy as it sounds. Do you have any way you can talk to people about really how complicated that is and why it may or may not work as it is?
Right. Well, as you said, we do transplants of the cornea, which is just the front of the eye, but no one has ever transplanted the entire eye. But just to give you a history, well, I shouldn't say no one has ever transplanted an eye. I would say no one has successfully transplanted an eye where someone can actually get restoration of their vision and where the eye can survive. But the concept of eye transplantation has actually been around for over 100 years. And the first person that tried to transplant an eye was a Dr. Chabre. He was a French surgeon, and he transplanted a rabbit eye into a young girl. And it failed because at the time they did not have immunosuppression, so the eye rejected. They also did not have the surgical techniques to sew together the arteries and the veins. And also, of course, they could not restore vision because the optic nerve, which is the main nerve responsible for vision in the eye, does not regenerate well. And so, you know, the problem of eye transplantation is that there are many obstacles. One, the eye is obviously a very complex part of the body. There are so many different tissue types. But one of the obstacles to eye transplantation would be restoring adequate blood supply to the eye, so making sure that you can take an eye and then sew together the blood vessels to restore blood flow. Another obstacle is making sure that the tissue doesn't reject, that the body doesn't reject the tissue. So if you take tissue from one person and put it in another person, then you're going to have a response to the immune system called rejection. So that is another obstacle of eye transplantation. And another main obstacle is failure of the optic nerve to regenerate. So this is the nerve that essentially supplies vision. And it is part of the central nervous system, similar to the brain, and this tissue does not regenerate well. So, you know, in order to get eye transplantation to be successful, there, you know, are obviously many intricate things that need to happen in order to bring it all together. I don't know if that answers your question.
No,
it's a good
answer because it is helping me understand. And for many lay people such as myself, I don't really understand how the organs of the body work. I do know that vision is not happening in the eye. The eye is sending it through the nervous system into the brain, and the brain
right.
is actually seeing. So it's not like, you know, the eye is what sees. It's the, you have to have the, it's sort of the lens taking in the picture, and that has to be translated to the brain, and then the brain has to understand what it's seeing. So that, to me, is what would make it really, really complex, that you would have to be able to reestablish that connection.
Correct, correct, exactly.
Yeah.
So that has been listed as actually one of the main obstacles. So I spoke about that French surgeon, and he did the first eye transplantation. That was in 1885. And really after that, there were some attempts. But in 1977, the Advisory Council for the National Eye Institute basically said that, you know, because of the reasons that you stated, you know, you have to get the tissue to regenerate to the brain and then the brain to really enable a person to see, that, you know, eye transplantation is basically doomed to failure because of our inability to do this. But, you know, there have been a lot of advances in science recently in the last decade or so that really give us hope that we can start to revisit eye transplantation. That's one of the reasons that I started doing research in eye transplantation about 6 years ago, because we've made so many advances, surgical advances, advances in transplantation research, and as well as advances in optic nerve regeneration, or getting the nerves to regenerate in the eye so that they can send a signal to the brain.
Hmm. So at this point, you feel like this is promising? The potential to be able to do this is promising?
I do think it's promising. I think when people ask me, you know, when do I think eye transplantation will happen, I'm confident that I really believe it will happen in the next decade or so. And the long answer is I do believe that it will happen in my lifetime. Obviously, it's a very intricate and difficult surgery, and there's so many things involved. But I think that, again, there's so many advances that are happening right now and that are going to happen in the future to make it a clinical reality and something that people will be able to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think, however, that it will be something that's going to be a great treatment for everyone that does not have vision. I think it will be a really specialized situation, in particular, you know, someone that has suffered trauma to the eye, like our wounded service members. About 16% of all wounded service members have some kind of injury to the eye. And ocular trauma, or trauma to the eye, in our active duty service members ranks fourth among injuries for our wounded warriors. So I think in particular that will be a population that may benefit from eye transplantation. So it's not going to be, you know, for everybody, but I think in certain select people that don't have any other options, it will be a great option for them.
Mm-hmm. So essentially you're saying that it might not really work for a person who was born without sight.
I think that I don't think we have the answer to that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the difficult part with someone that's born without sight is that they do not have probably the part of their brain, the visual centers in their brain, have never developed or may not have developed to the extent of someone, obviously, that has had vision and then lost it. So I think that's something that'll be very interesting to see. You know, mm-hmm. Will we be able to develop those connections in someone that's never had vision?
Yeah.
An example, which is not exactly the same, but something we can kind of learn from, there have been several people that have had hand transplants, for instance, throughout the world. One in particular was done in a young boy, and he was at the University of Pennsylvania, and he actually never had hands, and then he actually got he got two hands transplanted to his extremities, and he has been able to use them. And so you would think of, he's an example of someone that may not have had the areas in the brain developed dedicated to the hands, but somehow the brain was able to remodel so that he was able to send signals from these new hands to his brain. So I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's so much we don't know about the ability of our brain to remodel. I think in the past it was thought that really our brain didn't have a lot of capacity or flexibility to remodel. And I think, that mindset has really changed in the last few decades. I think there's a lot that we don't know. And so, you know, as our research progresses, that will be something that we will look at, hopefully in the future.
Yeah, I guess
maybe when the brain starts receiving new signals, it takes those and starts working with them and figures out how to, you know, use those.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's John. And I suppose that it's if a person is young, a child or an infant, it might have a better chance than if it's someone who's older and their brain is not quite as malleable or plastic. So I suppose that that was going to have an impact on any kind of surgery. And, since John has joined us in this conversation, welcome back, John.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah, John was mentioning something about There's another researcher that's looking at growing eyes in a petri dish. Do you know anything about this?
That's George Church. I was talking to him. He's a geneticist. And I asked him, you know, I told him about Dr. Washington working on research for eye transplantation. And I said, you know, I asked Dr. Washington about her assistant, Dr. Sue. I asked him, well, where is she going to get the eye to transplant? And he said, from a eye bank, you know, a donor eye. And, you know, that's great, but you never know what shape that eye might be in, or your body could reject it, you know, after the surgery. And so I think a few years ago I saw something on the Internet where someone was regrowing an eye from stem cells and genes and DNA, and You know, you're taking these stem cells from the transplant recipient's body and some tissue from the eye and other things and putting these together. And over time, I think it was a three-month period, they actually grew an eye. So I asked George Church, the geneticist, what he thought of that, because he's regrowing organs. And he was on 60 Minutes twice in January. They had him on. That's how I found out about him. And he said, yeah, he thinks it's possible, but again, he said the big problem is reattaching the optic nerve. And I thought, well, with stem cells, genes, other things, maybe that could help the nerve to reattach. There's nanotechnology that's out. There's a lot of things coming out now, and who knows where they're going to lead to, and it's just, you know, there's not too many people doing what Dr. Washington's doing. I haven't seen anybody else that's even doing research on eye transplant. And you have to remember, the eye is a part of the brain. It's your brain. It's attached right to the brain. So when you operate on the eye, it's kind of like doing brain surgery. So, you know, it's just amazing that she's even trying to do research on this. And I think Dr. Washington, you told me you're doing hand transplant research and other things you're working on. Facial reconstruction?
Mm-hmm.
Are you working on that too?
Yes, that's actually how I became interested in eye transplantation. So kind of I did my medical training at the University of Pittsburgh, and I spent 2 years doing basic science research during my surgical residency training in the Starzl Transplant Institute. So Thomas Starzl is kind of known as the father of transplantation. So he really pioneered solid organ transplantation, in particular liver transplantation. So, you know, it was a great place to be at the time. There were a lot of scientists working on different aspects of transplantation. So I learned so much at the time. And actually, Dr. Starzl was still around when I was there. And he just died a few years ago. But long story short, so when I was there, my chairman at the time, Dr. Andrew Lee, started doing research on hand and face transplantation. So we started using animal models, small animal models, and then later large animal models. And then during that time, we performed 8 hand transplants in 5 people, and also the first bilateral hand transplant in the United States was done during that time. So I was lucky to be in my surgical training, so I got to participate in the surgeries as well as help to take care of the patients. So that's how I got interested in hand transplantation, and I also did research with an animal model with face transplantation, actually looking at cortical remodeling, or remodeling that happens in the brain and mapping that happens in the brain after face transplantation. So I looked at that in a small animal model. So the whole field in general is actually called vascularized composite allotransplantation. So it's just kind of differentiating this type of transplantation from solid organ transplantation, which, for example, would be a kidney transplant or a heart transplant or a liver transplant, because these are organs that have mostly the same tissue type. So in vascularized composite allotransplantation, an example would be hand transplantation, face transplantation, eye transplantation. You're transplanting parts of the body that have several different tissue types that have to be incorporated into the recipient of the transplant. Another example would be transplantation of the uterus. This has been done in the last few years as well, where people have transplanted a uterus, and people have been able to actually have live births or babies through their transplanted uterus. Another example that's happened in the last couple of years is penile transplantation. There have been two penile transplants in the country, and these were done in wounded warriors that had injuries during their service time. So these are kind of just several different examples of these types of transplants. So I became interested in during my training and with my experience with hand transplantation. And then when I finished my training, I started doing research in eye transplantation because there was a lot of interest at the institution at the time. So that's kind of how I got involved in this line of research.
Well, when you say eye transplantation research, I mean, have you actually worked on people? Have you tried doing any of these transplants or?
Right, not in people. So right now we're mostly working in small animals. Yeah, correct.
And how's that gone? How has that worked out with the animals?
Well, so far with the animals, the first several years we spent establishing just a model for transplantation because no one really has had a small animal model that we can really use to study all the aspects of transplantation. So we actually have used the entire face and the eye transplanted together in rats, and we take them from one rat and transplant it to a different recipient rat, and then we connect all the arteries and veins and the optic nerve.
All microsurgery,
which is why it is in particular an interest of a plastic surgeon, reconstructive surgeon like myself, because a lot of the surgeries that we do already involve microsurgery. And so that's why it's been a good kind of transition to do this research because of the intricacy of the type of surgery that it entails.
So you've actually figured out a way to remove an eye and then put the other eye in and reconnect the blood vessels and the optic nerve and the rectus muscles. There's four rectus muscles that hold the eye in.
John,
hold up. Okay, right. Doctor, go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. So in the model, we actually take the entire hemi face or half of the face of the eye, and we also take the eye with half of the face. So the muscles are already with the transplant, if that makes sense.
Right.
They're already intact. And then we transplant it to a different animal. So in the rat, the eye itself is too small to transplant by itself. With the arteries and veins are too small to sew together. So we take the entire hemi face, and then we take, not to get too technical, but we take what's called the carotid artery system, which helps supply the blood to that part of the face. And that way we're able to sew together the vessels because they're bigger. In a larger animal, for example, you probably could transplant, like a pig, for example, you would be able to transplant just the eye by itself because the blood supply is big enough to sew back together. Most of our work is done in a small animal model because there's, you know, obviously so many things that need to be worked out scientifically before we move to a big animal model or before we move to humans.
I have a question. So would it make sense to do that to a human being, to pull out all of the facial muscles as well?
Well, they've done a lot of face transplants in humans already, probably over 20 face transplants throughout the world. And a lot of the transplants have actually involved the tissue around the eye. They haven't actually involved the eye itself. So I think it actually won't be a major transition to incorporate the eye into some of the face transplants that have already been performed. And actually, a lot of the face transplant recipients have actually been blind. So, you know, they may have benefited from getting both a face and an eye transplant.
Okay.
You know, George Church also told me that he can change the genetic codes in a pig to the genetic codes in a person, and that you could actually transplant organs from a pig into a person, and they won't reject them. And he said you could even try to use a pig's eye for transplantation into a person. So he's really doing a lot of amazing work over there. I'm hoping I can get you two together and maybe talking about some of this. I was going to try and get him on the show today, but he didn't get back to me, so I'm sure he's pretty busy. But hope in the future we can get you two to get together.
Excellent. That would be wonderful, I think. And I'm really very much amazed at what is possible in terms of what this medical profession, yourself as a surgeon, what is even possible to me is amazing when we see the developments in medicine. It's hard to get discouraged with medicine because of all that's going on at the moment and not having resources for people with our current situation in our country. But medicine can be amazing, and I think that you're illustrating that. It's pretty wonderful, Dr. Washington.
Thank you. It's very exciting and also very humbling work. People reach out to our laboratory all the time asking for eye transplants, and you know, we tell them at the time we're still just doing research in mostly small animals, and that we're not yet at the point where we can do this in humans, but it does give them hope, and you know, that is really what keeps us going and what's really fulfilling for us, to give people hope that one day we will be able to restore vision for certain people through eye transplantation.
Excellent. And I don't know if anyone listening would want to or would even be able to access your work, but is there some way people can connect with you if they want to read about what you're doing, where you're articles may be published, or how you would want people to connect to your work?
Sure. Well, they can call our laboratory. Our laboratory director, his name is Dr. Stu, and the phone number of our laboratory is 303-724-5797. Again, that's 303-724-5797. You can kind of access information about our laboratory through the University of Colorado website if you look up my name, Kia Washington, or the Department of Surgery. We also have an Instagram page that we keep up to date. It's lowercase i_transplant. So lowercase i_transplant. And that's... we kind of update that a lot of times with just different things going on in the laboratory. We do have some articles published that you can look up in PubMed under my name, Kia Washington. And we have had some media articles in the media as well. A few years ago, there was an article in Stat News, which publishes different things on different scientific endeavors. And that's STAT. So between those, hopefully you can find some information on our work.
And you spell your first name, K-I-A.
Yes, K-I-A, right. And then Washington, right. Like the state.
Excellent. So we're coming close to the end of our program. I wanted to give you an opportunity if you wanted to share anything with people about your work or perhaps about the world. You know, the door is open for you to offer whatever you'd like to share with our listeners, Kia, Dr. Washington.
Okay. I think I'd like to share one of the letters that I got from someone that was interested in eye transplantation. He's one of our wounded warriors. And he said, Dear Dr. Washington, I am a former Army Explosive Ordnance Disposal Technician. An undiscovered IED detonated and took both my eyes while I was defusing another. I have only just recently read of the research you and others are doing in the field of whole eye transplantation. It was my sincerest hope to to become a possible candidate when human trials become possible. In the past 5 years of blindness, I have done everything possible to make the most of my situation. I have climbed mountains, kayaked white water, and run marathons. The world without sight does not frighten me. In fact, my speeches around the country center on maintaining perspective on life despite its challenges. However, I have not seen my six-year-old son since his first birthday, and sure would like to throw the ball with him one day. There is also one particular fiancé of mine who everyone tells me is quite beautiful. Thank you for your time and for the work you are doing. So this was a really touching letter for me, and just really keeps me inspired about continuing our work and hopefully helping people like this young gentleman one day.
Oh, that was beautiful. And I think it's also, it's very inspiring to people to see how much of a spirit he brings to his life despite the challenge of having lost his sight in a wartime situation. That's pretty amazing. So I really appreciate that. And John, do you want to share some last thoughts with our listeners before we run out of time?
Yeah, another thing that's important is funding to help with research like this. And, you know, if the government would put more money into research for projects like this than you know, the military, other things they put money into, we could improve a lot of things. And if anybody wanted to help out with funding, they could try and get a hold of her assistant, Dr. Sue, and that helps a lot, too.
Excellent. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, that's a matter of connecting with government and politicians as well to try to sway their perspective on what's important. And so, yeah, I'm sure that there's a lot that people can do to get involved and hopefully bring this whole possibility closer to us. Though, Dr. Washington, I'm sure that you're going to bring it to us. So I feel confident that you have an amazing dedication and talent, as well as, you know, the science of being a doctor. I really appreciate your work. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And thank you, John. Monroe, do you want to give out your number again?
Oh, yeah. If anybody wants to reach me or have any questions or an eye problem or whatever, the office number here in Boulder, Colorado is 303-494-4532. And our website is drbanker.com, drbanker.com, and I'm usually in the office 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me today, and hopefully we'll be able to do some update and see what's happening. I think probably people have a lot of questions for both of you. We don't have time today, but the next time around, maybe we can take some calls about people who want to know about transplant. Not just for the eyes, but as you were saying, for the hands as
facial.
Well.
And facial. Dr. Washington, why don't you give out your Dr. Sue's number again at the office?
Okay, yes. 303-724-5797.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you both. And bye for now.
All right.
Thank
See you later.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. In the meantime, I just wanted to take a moment to connect with you and just let you realize how important it is that we all are to each other, and that we can begin to really stabilize ourselves by grounding with the earth. That song I played for you was by Lale, L-A-L-E, about Mother Earth. And I'm going to go out playing a piece of music. And it's Hope, so we'll play that. And then we will see what we can do about making that transition to all that's happening in the day. I just wanted to remind you to take all of the cautions and precautions seriously, washing the hands, wiping things down, because we don't know where and when we might have common contact. And even if we're doing fine, We don't want to build up that load. We don't want to pass it on to people. We want to keep our own health preserved. So that's what we all are going to do, I believe. And then as we do that, we will connect more deeply with each other through other means, through the spirit, through the heart, through forms of communication such as this. Also, this program, Heart of Mind, I've just started a podcast, so you can look up Heart of Mind podcast on all of these broadcast platforms and you'll be able to connect with this program and other iterations of it and just not lose contact, because we want to be here to be the fortification and support and nourishment to each other. And take good care of yourself as we move into this transition. The transition on the air to the next program. Okay. Let's see. Thank you.